And then we will go to the plans for new HAVA funds. Well, actually, no, we'll still go ahead and do it. Set next meeting, I said we're moving. We'll give Trevor a chance to catch his breath. Regulatorily, we're supposed to have at least, I think, 3 meetings a year.
Is that 4?
Okay. 4 meetings. It certainly makes sense that one of those will be after the general election, as we look at what worked, what didn't work. We could, this is our second meeting of the year, we could have another meeting over the summer, or we could wait until after the general and plan on having 2 meetings in that phrase. I'm inclined to say that's really when we'd need them as we look at what the legislative makeup's going to be and where we may want to go, and take the whole summer off and then the early fall where everybody is rushing for an election, but I am open to your input. Seeing no input. By the way, do we have someone with us on the phone? I forgot to ask that earlier when we had folks introduce themselves.
Hey, Wayne, this is Judd. I've been listening.
Okay, Judd, thanks for being there. Judd is out of the office today, and so that's – I knew there was someone on the call, but I forgot who it was. Sorry about that. So I think we will – unless there is some issue that necessitates an earlier time, we will plan on meeting after the election. And that's far away enough that – well, let's at least look at a possible tentative date.
I'm just looking who's behind me.
Well, so when is the canvas over under the new law?
22 days.
Why is my... Yeah, so let's... So if we did, so Canvas finishes 20, you said 22 days after? So that would be the 28th. How do people feel about Thursday the 29th? If you've already telling me you've set appointments for that date, I'm going to be really surprised.
November. After the election.
Yes, the week after Thanksgiving. So Thanksgiving's the prior week. Canvas is over. That allows us to at least talk a little bit about how the November election went. So let's plan on, is 1:30 a good time? Of course, the people here are the ones who can make the 1:30 meeting, so they all think it's a great time. Let's go with 1:30 on November 29th, and if that, if anything changes, well, you know, if someone feels there's a need for the meeting ahead of that time, we can always add it, but failing that, we'll go Wednesday, November 29th. Okay, now we'll go back to the item I skipped. We have, under new federal law, new federal appropriation, money in Colorado that has to be spent within 5 years, provided we meet the 10% match. We are, or 5% match.
5%.
Yeah, it's 5. We are proceeding through the Joint Budget Committee's process. We'll be meeting with them. Tim, do you know the date yet, or... 20th or 21st of June, we'll be visiting with the Joint Budget Committee, asking them to allow us to use some of our existing cash funds to meet that 5% match so we qualify for the federal funds. Having said that, There are a couple other things that have to be done in addition to providing the 5% match, which we can do relatively easily. Our office continues to run so efficiently that our problem is we have more money than we're supposed to under the statutory limits, which is why I've been able to reduce fees a number of times. So I don't think the 5% match is the issue. The issue is then where do we spend the money? We have to at least provide an outline to the federal government. And then we have to make good decisions that help and benefit Colorado voters. I asked Trevor Timmons if he would present on HAVA funding considerations. And the purpose of this is first to present some things, but also to get your input. Are we missing anything? Is there any critical thing that you think is important? What are your opinions on what we're throwing out as possibilities? This is an advisory body, and this is one of your chances to provide that advice. We're also doing it in a public setting, so that if people want to get us comments the next couple days before we set things down, they will have the ability to do that. Under Colorado law, the expenditure of HAVA funds is generally within the discretion of the Secretary of State. I have used my discretion to provide 24/7 drop boxes across the state to help counties purchase new election equipment. And I guess before we turn it over to Trevor, hopefully all of you have seen the recent series of articles initiated by the Washington Post in which they categorized Colorado as the safest place in America to cast a vote. Because of the paper ballots that we use under the rules I adopted following the uniform voting system and the pilot election review committee process. Some of these were very long processes, as some of you may recall, that began half a dozen years ago in some cases. But because of that process, because of the risk limiting audit, because of the other things that Colorado has taken, the Washington Post ran an article talking about how we were the safest state in America to vote. That was then picked up by the Denver Post, a number of the other local papers, Durango Herald and others. And then the Gazette wrote an op-ed commenting on the fact that this was a great place because of the security measures we have taken. We are not resting, and that is what Trevor is going to talk about. But I wanted to start with that intro to say, we're a little different from a lot of other states. Georgia just conducted an election yesterday in which there are no paper records of any vote that was cast. None. Zero. We're trusting those electronics. Now, I'm not saying that there was an issue, but I'm saying that Colorado is much farther along than many other states because virtually every county has adopted new voting systems. The only county, the middle-sized county that hasn't, there's two of them, Montrose and Garfield. One of those had equipment failures already this election. It is our hope that both of them will be moving to the new system soon. But we've got over 96% of our state's population voting on new systems. And so we're much further along than most other states are. So our expenditure that Trevor's going to talk about is different than a state that is still struggling to get a paper verification, to still get a qualified audit. So we started a different point. Having said that, that's not to say there aren't important things to do, but they're not the critical red error light flashing that you have in some other states. We are in a much better situation, but there's still important things to do. And so let me turn it over to Trevor.
Thank you, Secretary Williams. Put a little slide deck together for you. Obviously, Steve Ward will post this after the meeting so you can review it. We have had several meetings, internal meetings in our office. We've had several discussions with folks outside our office in terms of some priorities that may surface as we're looking at the additional funding provided by the federal government. As the Secretary also mentioned, states have 5 years to expend these funds. The match must be provided within 2 years. As he also indicated, Colorado will probably be way ahead of the curve on that. I believe that about a dozen states have submitted information in writing to the Election Assistance Commission that's required under the omnibus bill. It's got to be provided within 90 days of the approval of the funding, the notice of approval of the funding by the EAC. And so we'll be providing that to DC within the next month or so to conform with that deadline. And Steve, would you mind advancing? So we're really considering investments in three broad categories. One is technological investments that are directly related to election systems. Two are technological investments that provide an indirect or a complementary benefit to election systems. These are generally investments that would be associated with our agency as a whole that would provide complementary benefits to the election systems that we directly manage, but aren't directly and solely exclusively used for the for improving the posture of election systems. And then the third area is really services and human factors investments that are directly related to elections. Steve. And so we wanted to give you some ideas of some examples of some of the areas that we're considering in each of those three broad categories. So in terms of technological investments directly related to elections, we're looking at the expansion. We already have a secure portal that's actually used by UOCAVA voters. It's called the Secure Ballot Return, for them to securely and upload a voted ballot. It's not using email, which is not secure. It's not using a fax machine, which is arguably not secure. But it's actually using a secure portal, similar to the portal that you would use if you've closed on a house within the last couple of years or you're doing financial transactions. So the documents that you may upload to your bank or financial institution, they're not just transmitted in the clear over a wire. They're actually securely uploaded. It's that same type of system. And we're looking at a potential expansion of that system for purposes of counties exchanging between themselves and to us information relative to voters and doing that in a secure manner, so avoiding email with specific information on voters, but actually expanding that portal that we already have in place. The second piece is a smart, secure, removable media for elections data exchanges. You know, if you've followed this area, air gapping of systems is a critical kind of capability that's required so that when election night results, for example, are pulled from a tabulation machine and then connected to a network-connected computer for uploading to the state's election night reporting system for unofficial results on election night. Currently, that's got to be a one-way trip. That USB key that is connected to tabulation can't be connected to a network-connected device and then reattached, right, to that tabulation machine, because then you would violate that air gap between tabulation and voting equipment and other types of machines. There are technologies, they're smart removable media that actually gets wiped and reformatted every time it's used. And so that's one thing that we're looking at. So we do have some counties that they buy a box of USB drives and they make that one-way trip and then they end up in a trash can essentially. And so we're looking at a way to make that a little more sustainable. It's the type of USB devices. When we had the folks from Department of Homeland Security in our office for a risk and vulnerability assessment a couple of months ago, it's the type of USB key that those folks use that is cleared for holding secret information. The third area is we're looking at bringing on a development team for modernization of the core score application. We do believe that this is an 18 to 24 month probably engagement that we would hire contract developers that we've vetted and qualified to actually move some of those core pieces of score functionality that are still living in the legacy system that we initially deployed in 2007, 2008. And we believe that this is an area that would actually help modernize that core system and allow us to take some other capabilities of score into a more modern, secure, web-based application. And then the fourth area of example of technological improvements directly related to elections is improvements to the risk-limiting audit systems. Colorado did run the first statewide risk-limiting audit in the last election. As we continue to work with folks folks in the academic community and in the elections advocacy community and elections professionals, we know that there's room for improvements in those systems. And so we do believe that that we'll be making improvements to that RLA system going forward into the future. Next slide. We also have some improvements that provide indirect benefit to elections because they're not solely for elections, but they apply to the agency as a whole. Some examples of this are, and I won't take credit for this first one, software or service for tracking social media and the dark web for information about threats and indicators of compromises. Actually came from a colleague in another state in the union, that they're looking at this as a way to try to broaden the information that they've got access to understand what people are saying about their state and about election systems and the vulnerabilities and the threats specifically. This is the same type of service that if you were running a private company and you wanted to find out what customers were saying about you in social media, there are companies that do this sort of thing. And there are companies that specifically focus in this area from the cybersecurity vulnerability perspective as well. The second piece is a security automation and orchestration platforms. I will tell you that in summer of 2016, when the information actually came out that there was activity focused on eroding confidence and maybe compromising election systems, this predates the designation of elections systems under critical infrastructure of the United States. We probably had 100 phone calls from companies that said, oh, we have a great system that leverages artificial intelligence and machine learning to help you know what bad things are happening. Now, at that time, as elections was in the news in terms of cybersecurity concerns, there were 100 companies easily that were offering to come in and to help, you know, for a price. There has been a maturation of products in that space. And so that's one of the areas that we're looking at is try to leverage some of those AI-based systems to actually improve our ability to recognize and then actually take action when we do see threats and vulnerabilities and indicators of compromise. And the third thing is really integration of white hat hacking into a software development lifecycle. At the current time, we do the coders that work in our office, they're trained in secure coding practices. We do penetration tests and vulnerability tests within our own organization, but we do not typically have white hat hackers involved in our software development process. We usually bring them in when we have a release candidate software that we're prepared to release to production, so they're involved more at the end of that software development lifecycle. And so we're considering whether we could engage with white hat hackers. So, and they call them white hat because they're wearing white hats instead of black hats. They're folks that use the same skills and the same tools that the bad guys are using, but they're using them for good. And so that's really one of the areas that we're considering moving into, just bringing in those white hat hackers. There again, there are companies, there are individuals that do this, you know, on a regular basis in a lot of areas. We leverage them closer to our software release point in time instead of earlier in the process. So that's an area that we're considering. And then, Steve, the next slide. And then the last area that I mentioned is kind of services and human factors areas directly related to election systems. Some examples in that domain are tabletop exercises on incident response and preparedness. Colorado, we are already deep in planning, working with our county stakeholders on a tabletop exercise around election preparedness that we're planning to do later this summer. The second area is emergency and critical communications capability. Within the first responder community, this is something that most first responders are already leveraging. The U.S. government is devoting a lot of funding over the last couple of years to FirstNet, which is intended to provide that first responder communications capability. We have seen in Colorado that on election day or during early voting, if there's a need to reach out to our county stakeholders or reach up to federal stakeholders, that there may be a communications gap there, right? When we're reaching out by email or by telephone, we may be reaching county clerks and recorders and election directors, but we don't have an easy way to reach all the way down to, say, that election judge lead in a VSPC. And so, you know, we're looking at, you know, SMS-based platforms to actually reach down to that lowest level, you know, should we need to communicate, you know, in an emergency with critical communications. The third area, security audits of all elections-related systems. You know, the fact of life is there are a lot of government stakeholders, and there are a lot of private company stakeholders involved in the elections process. There are election night reporting vendors. There are vendors that assist with providing ballot tracking notifications. There are voting system vendors. And looking at security audits against what are becoming pretty well-known standards published by the Center for Internet Security, the best practices published by the Belfer Center out of Harvard, the best practices mentioned by the Senate Select Intelligence Committee, actually conducting security audits of those various parties that do have a role within the conduct of elections and election systems. That's an area that we haven't previously actually engaged with in a really deep way with parties across that spectrum. Vulnerability and penetration tests of all those elections-related systems. We do vulnerability and penetration tests of our own systems. When we do solicitations, we actually require that vendor partners that engage with us provide evidence that they do vulnerability scans and that they do penetration testing. In the new normal, we may actually increase the frequency with which we're actually doing those activities. And then the last thing I wanted to mention is a red team, blue team exercises. These are pretty well known within the cyber and the military community. Essentially, you've got two teams of people. One will emulate a red team, that is a bad guy, that is actually trying to compromise your systems. And at the same time, you set up a blue team. These are the folks that are trying to protect you from those nefarious activities. Red team, blue team exercises, again, they're really common within...
And we might use different names for them, given the color. We'll call it different
understood,
colors.
Understood. We can come up with the plaid team and the stripe team. Again, red team, blue team is the common vernacular that's used within military and the cyber community. But again, it's setting up an exercise where you have white hat hackers that are playing the role of the enemy and trying to compromise systems, and then you set them up against your resources that you have in place to protect those systems. And they really try to look at avenues, channels, methods of compromise, and then on the protection side, you try to react against those. Again, it's pretty common. Those types of exercises are really an analog to those tabletop exercises that I mentioned earlier. Tabletop exercises, you do bring in the cyber and the IT folks to play a role within those exercises to test and kind of put you in the mindset of responding to incidents and responding to emergencies. Those red team, blue team exercises, mostly those are focused on cyber. You're not really reaching out to a public information officer and saying, oh, you know, you have a reporter with a camera in your face and a microphone asking you this question, how do you respond? Those red team, blue team exercises, they're really more the cyber folks that are seeing some of those attacks going on and then how they defend against those. And it's really trying to develop that muscle, you know, to develop that knowledge around what sorts of things can happen and what steps do you take to actually respond and react. So we wanted to give you some examples of some of the things that we're considering. Again, if you've looked at any of the guidance that have been published by the Election Assistance Commission, the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence, the Center for Internet Security, the Belfer Center out of Harvard, there's a lot of information out there in terms of best practices that states can be looking at. Secretary Williams mentioned some of the states that do not have broad use of paper ballots. Many of them are looking at systems that actually have, you know, either a VPAT or a full-size paper ballot, you know, for use in risk-limiting audits after as a post-election activity. In Colorado, we're looking in a little different area because we have some of those things already covered. And then my last slide, be happy to answer any questions you may have, and also to gain some ideas from you folks in terms of those HAVA funds and what purposes you might see that we might want to consider.
Trevor, thank you very much. The intent is of the legislation is they're supposed to be focused. These funds are a little more narrow focus than the original HAVA grant. These are focused primarily on securing the elections. And there really are two purposes in this. One of them is to protect the elections. And the second, which is almost equally as important, is having people have confidence in that election system. Because if you don't have confidence in the election system, you are less likely to vote, you're less likely to participate. There's no reason to vote if you think someone's going to hack your vote and change it. So it's both providing the security and providing the assurance of the security. And again, Colorado's paper ballots and risk-limiting audit are two parts of that. I will tell you that there's two of these that are taking place fairly quickly. The first of those, we are setting up in early September a war game, elections war game with clerk and recorders, where we'll bring not only the clerk, but some of a county IT person, elections, several people from each county, and we will be covering the cost of that out of these funds. It is nice that people in a office have security, but our elections process goes throughout the state, and so we've got to secure it throughout the state. Not every county has the level of sophistication of Arapahoe County, as I see Arapahoe clerk here. A lot of the others struggle and have, in some cases, no regular IT person, even on staff at the county. They rely on a contractor who kind of rides in on the circuit, and no, it's not quite riding in on a wagon, but it's not that dissimilar. The other one, which is an immediate need that we plan on doing, is updating the risk-limiting audit software. And so that is, those are two of the key points. Having said that, Trevor's thrown out a wide variety of things. I guess my first question would be, are we missing things? And not seeing anyone jump up. I will ask the other question, and then I'll give you the caveat that I'm going to ask for public comment on suggestions, on ideas through May 31st. We've got to have time to put your ideas together. And so this is not a speak now or forever hold your peace, but it's speak by May 31st, and otherwise it may not have much good, because we do have to submit it within that 90-day time frame set by them. So we want to kind of roll it out here and then give you a little bit of time to think about it, go back to your organizations, or for those who may be listening in on the Internet to provide it. And the best email address they should use, Trevor, for sending comments in is what?
Elections@sos.state.co.us.
So we use our standard elections mailbox. Please feel free to do that. And that's the same place you send public comments and other issues on a regular basis. So it's not an unusual email address. And we'll put it on the website. Steve will add that there so that people know how to do that. Questions or comments or suggestions? Everyone's all... Everyone's really gabby today. I've noticed the... Everyone's... Jennifer. Hand her the mic, please. Go on, Matt.
This is Jennifer Levin with Disability Law Colorado. I just was curious if you could consider training for election judges or people with disabilities on the new equipment, and would that somehow be able to be to relate to confidence in their vote and, you know, election security somehow? Because I know that most of our complaints that we get are about the judges not knowing how to use the equipment. Okay. And now that we have this new equipment, I was wondering if there's some way to implement training, you know, a boost of training for everybody, or maybe a demonstration for people specifically with disabilities so that they can go in and vote knowing that their vote was cast, you know, in spite of the fact that they may not be able to see or hear or whatever their disability is.
Okay. We'll add that. Look, I'm not sure, given the narrowing of the classification in this case, I'm not sure, but we'll look at it. So thank you. Thank you for that idea. Other ideas, suggestions? Matt and Pam, if you can send that out to the county clerks as well. Obviously, to the extent this is a partnership, we want to make sure we provide the support we can. On that note, I would note that our office, noting a lot here, does provide a lot of support, even outside the normal area. We've actually been, we were there the Saturday after the CDOT issue occurred, helping them install a firewall. We've been helping counties in some cases with completely non-election related IT security issues. It is an important part. Our democracy is under attack at times, and we have to defend it, and people have to have confidence in that. So, Michael. It's flashing green. It's on, theoretically.
Here we go. Michael Valdez, SDA. Mr. Secretary, is it appropriate with those funds to utilize advertising to the public how secure the system is to help build their confidence? Is that within the parameters of what's available for the funding? I see a judge is consulting in the sidelines over there.
No, I'm looking back at some of our crack legal team in the Secretary of State's office. I'm not sure. I think it may be limited. Unlike the initial HAVA funds that had that kind of broad ability to help America vote, which is what it stood for, this later allocation is more narrowly restricted. So we'll look at it. I'll give you the same answer I did, Jennifer. But, hey, if you don't tell us, I can't look at it. So we'll review it. Other issues on this? Okay. As I indicated, we will keep comment officially open to May 31st, as late as midnight. If you have suggestions, now is the time to do that. We, as we lay out the document to the federal government, it doesn't have to be dollars and cents for what's going to each proposal, nor would that make sense for us, because you wouldn't want to say, I'm going to buy a piece of software that does this, and I'm going to pay $6,000 or $600,000 for it, because the vendor would then say, oh, they're paying $600,000. I'll bid $599,999. But we will be submitting that document. We will send it out to you, so you've got a chance to see it as well. But would encourage anyone who has suggestions to provide those to us. If there are things you think we're missing, Amanda, I know with the national organization, if you've talked to some of your peers around the country, if they've got some other ideas, that'd be great too. And if there are things that we can do that assist the special districts, municipalities, or things, let us know. Seeing no other comments, are there any other matters that need to be brought up at today's meeting? Seeing none. Are there any suggestions for agenda topics? Please send them to Judd for the next Bipartisan Election Advisory Committee, which is tentatively set for November 29th, if I remember right, at 1:30 p.m. And again, if there ever is a need where you think there's something important that needs to be discussed, please let us know. We'll do the same here. So it's possible we might say, hey, there's some issue we need to talk about. I anticipate the agenda items will include how the process worked for the primary. While there will be certainly some discussion sooner than that, no legislative or other changes would be needed or could be made. And there's not a rush for anything since the next primary is 2 years later. So there's time to address those. I would ask that if you and your organizations see any issues that come up in this first primary in which unaffiliated voters can participate, please let us know so that we can try to address those. And I know the clerks are anxious to do, and our office are both anxious to ensure everyone has that opportunity to cast their ballot and have that ballot counted to the greatest extent we can. So thank you for your time here today. Seeing no other comments, we are adjourned.